Here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlove.
And it is nice to be back home here on Lake Wissota for the second hour of Up North News Radio for this Friday, August 11th, 2023. Nice to have you along on this National Play in the Sand Day. It says here on the National Day calendar. And we know that National Play in the Sand Day is a popular thing because sand, of all things, is in the National Toy Hall of Fame. This is something that was brought to my attention by another program that every year takes issue with at least some of the nominees. The National Toy Hall of Fame is in Rochester, New York, and the original inductees back in 1998-99 included Barbie, of course, Crayola crayons, Etch-a-Sketch, Frisbee, Hula Hoop, Legos, Lincoln Logs, marbles, Monopoly, Play-Doh, the teddy bear. You get the idea. So there were these 17 original inductees, and then every year, two or three or four other toys are voted into the National Toy Hall of Fame. They, you know, include the Slinky, there was Silly Putty, a rocking horse. So, you know, some are specific, some are very general. And in 2008, they included the stick. And in 2021, sand, along with things like rubber ducks, chess, Star Wars action figures. And so, Aaron, if you ever find yourself playing with sand or a stick, you'll know you're playing with something that's in the National Toy Hall of Fame.
I'm glad to know that, so that if I ever go on the beach and anyone looks at me weird when I'm just digging myself into the sand, I can say that
I'm playing with a Hall of Fame toy here.
Yeah, you know? Exactly.
It's right up there with Magic 8 Ball and, you know, Matchbox cars, things like that. Of course.
Lincoln Logs, probably.
Yeah, you know, of course, sand and a stick, you know. Goodness. So anyway, enjoy National Play in the Sand Day today. Coming up on the program in this hour, the reputation of conservative Justice Clarence Thomas has shifted further from careless beneficiary to callous freeloader as dozens of vacations, private jet flights, resort stays, and VIP access are discovered, unreported in a way that would have ended the career of any other judge, and I would maintain any liberal Supreme Court justice. We'll talk to Mark Jacob about that and other media coverage of some of the latest right-wing legal troubles. We'll talk to Dan Schumacher and touch on sports a bit. He's fired up because his Chicago Cubs have been on a roll lately, and he's been rather quiet lately about the Brewers having a better season than the Cubs. And now that the Cubs are catching fire, I fear my friend is going to be just downright insufferable. Along the way, if you'd like to reach the show, you can always do that on the studio line at 844-967-2789. We have a lot of comments online through folks that are watching on various Facebook feeds and wanted to address a few of those here. Roger asked, when does Civic Media begin airing on one of the newest stations acquired, that one in Park Falls? And all I can tell you about that, Roger, is hopefully very soon. We'll keep you abreast of how that Park Falls station is moving along. Roger also noted that John Conley, the singer-songwriter of Rose Colored Glasses, is 77 years old today. We want to thank Jordan Anderson for his comment on our YouTube page, saying happy Friday, and thanks for, you know, delivering the news to us all the time, and that's very nice of you. Then there's folks like Beth, who I think is commenting on the Civic Media Facebook page. Well, she began by asking, you know, what are the topics that have been, you know, discussed so far today, saying that she just tuned in. She then added that the media is like a strainer and only the liberal court cases are allowed through. That's because we were talking about the fake electors case. And then she later went on to say, votes only count if the liberals get their way. Otherwise, the far left majority run states will override any conservative win. The short answer to that is, Beth, come on. But now let's go into something slightly deeper. When you say the majority-run states will override any conservative win, we have to get first to the definition of a win. And the definition of a win has been tainted in the United States because of the system that we set up through the Electoral College. The Electoral College cheapens the votes of some Americans. And as a result, a voter in, you know, a place like Wyoming counts more than all of the wasted votes in places like California and New York, where there are so many more people who are liberal or progressive that you don't need those votes in order to win the electoral votes from a state. And so conservatives over the past, you know, generation or more have been under the impression that because there are many red states, that somehow there are these conservative wins that are being offset by liberals, when in fact it's the electoral college system that is faulty. It's that same logic that has Wisconsin Republicans always saying that they're the ones who have the values of Wisconsinites, and that the votes in places like Madison and Milwaukee don't count for as much, you know, because they're all crammed together. And we out here on these wide open spaces, you know, we're the actual values. But when you go with one person, one vote, as you should, in a state, you see that Wisconsin is still a slightly more progressive state than a conservative one. And you would see that in the country as well if we had national popular vote rather than a rigged electoral college. So it's not that conservatives are being somehow undone by progressive wins. It's that progressives quite frequently actually do have more votes when you count one person, one vote. Our full weatherology forecast is coming up right after this break. This is Up North News Radio for this Friday. To the soundtrack from American Graffiti this morning, released on this day in 1973, about life in 1962. And the Platters there singing Smoke Gets in Your Eyes would have been a fantastic bumper song here, heading into Jennifer Vachitsky's weatherology forecast on most days. But the smoke has fortunately cleared recently, so that really hasn't been a concern, at least so far. It always is possible it could come back, but right now we're following some showers, maybe even a little thunder, that's been moving all across Wisconsin from west to east. And Jennifer tells us about that and how things are looking for tonight and all throughout the Wisconsin weekend in that weatherology forecast. Jennifer, good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, as you mentioned, there are a few scattered showers and storms moving through the state today, and we'll be seeing that across the board for everyone, ending a little earlier around southwestern Wisconsin, around Richland Center earlier today, with a slight risk for severe weather, though, as well, a level 2 out of 5 on the severe weather scale, with the main threats looking to be large hail and damaging winds. But there could be some tornado potential for extreme southern Wisconsin, so definitely something we'll keep you posted on as we get through the day today. Temperature-wise, looks to get into the mid to low 80s, a few spots in the upper 70s, like around Wausau and Oshkosh. For the weekend, Saturday, sunny skies for all, with highs in the mid 80s for southern Wisconsin, upper 70s to low 80s Oshkosh northward. Sunday, it looks like a chance for some showers and storms coming in by the afternoon from Wausau down to Madison and for western and over through western Wisconsin. Then a better chance for that rain coming in for the evening hours for everyone, and that'll come in for the eastern Wisconsin in the evening as well. Mid to upper 70s for most, a little warmer, lingering in the low to mid 80s, Madison over to Richland Center. Then by Monday, sneak peek at the work week next week, a cold front comes in. Chance for showers and storms continue, a little cooler for everyone, mid to upper 70s for the southern half of the state, low 70s from Wisconsin Rapids over to Baldwin, and an outlier of the upper 60s right around about Oshkosh.
Cooler, but I guess I would say still comfortable. Jennifer, thank you so much. Hope you have a great weekend.
Thanks, you too.
Temperatures around the state right now include 65 degrees up here on Lake Wissota in Chippewa Falls. Madison reporting 71, Hayward 61, Oshkosh 68 degrees, and in Wausau, folks listening to Bull Falls Radio, it is 60. Brewers were off yesterday getting set for a long road trip. Let me find my little paper schedule that I ripped off the bulletin board. It's off to play the White Sox this evening in Chicago starting at 7:10, so they play tonight, tomorrow evening, Sunday afternoon. And then they have Monday off for a travel day because they play the LA Dodgers out west Tuesday night, Wednesday night, Thursday night, all of them starting at 9:10 Central Time. And then they head right away to Texas to play the Rangers next weekend in games Friday night, Saturday afternoon, Sunday afternoon. And then they finally come back home to play the Minnesota Twins on Tuesday and Wednesday, not next week, but the week following. So long road trip for the Brewers right now, who are still in first place atop the National League Central Division. We'll see how things pan out by the time they finish a somewhat grueling road trip that's up ahead here. Our studio line number is 844-967-2789. And there's a topic that we haven't discussed a ton here on the show because there's been so many other state budget related topics to ask about. Here's something that was not in the budget bill, but it's a topic that's not going to go away, and it relates to the Brewers. And an article as led in this morning's Milwaukee Journal Sentinel by Molly Beck, who puts it in very stark terms. The Milwaukee Brewers could start looking for a new home this fall if state and local officials fail to reach agreement by then on a taxpayer-funded package to fund improvements to American Family Field required in the team's lease with the state. That, according to sources that she talked to, a process she writes that might lead the Brewers to the boom towns of Charlotte, North Carolina, or Nashville, Tennessee. This, of course, right away gets some folks triggered to say that this is all corporate blackmail and, you know, this isn't going to stand and the Brewers aren't going to want to go anyplace. They're the Milwaukee Brewers, for goodness sakes. Well, having lived in a place that did lose a team that was, you know, being jerks about threatening to move, you know, the Minnesota North Stars, they became the Dallas Stars. Minnesota eventually got expansion hockey back, but, you know, there were some very lean times there in terms of tourism and the economic impact that a major sports team brings. And Milwaukee is no stranger to losing its teams, having lost the Milwaukee Braves back in the day. And Milwaukee only has the Brewers because the Seattle Pilots folded after only 1 year. So it's not unheard of at all that a team could move. But that's not said in a way that should engender feelings of, you know, corporate blackmail more than it should be about what is the right level of economic development that we all, taxpayers, elected officials, and the private sector, should be investing in order to get the benefits of, in this case, a major league sports team. Put another way, the Brewers need would need hundreds of millions of dollars to make necessary repairs and upgrades to American Family Field. They're obviously not going to get all of that from the taxpayers. They have to put skin in the game. Governor Evers earlier this year proposed spending $290 million to kick in a state part of a commitment, and then there would be a local commitment sought as well. So it's not going to be the hundreds upon hundreds of millions. The governor is proposing $290 million. Other people would take the position that it should be $0, that if a sports team wants to be here, then they should pay their own way because they get all the benefits. Well, that's not true either, because again, like I said, having a major league franchise in a community, or even a minor league franchise in some other Wisconsin communities, does pay benefits. There is economic impact, there is tourism, there is sales, and then all the other ancillary business from restaurants to suppliers that go along with it. So the question is, what's the right number? What's the right level of support? And unfortunately, people's judgment gets clouded about the number when they either get angry at the prospect of feeling like they're being, you know, put over a barrel, or if they get, you know, equally passionate in saying, how can you not be supporting this team? It is so great, when admittedly life would go on if you lost a major league team. So how do you take emotion out of it? Well, you can't really. You can't take the emotion out of it. You can't take the politics out of it either. If there were a Republican governor instead of Tony Evers, if Tim Michaels had won that race, if he had put $290 million in there, I don't doubt for a minute you'd have Robin Voss, Devin Lemahue, and every other legislative Republican saying, way to go, Governor Michaels. That's exactly the right number. It's not too much. It's not too little. Way to go. Our team, you got it just right. But because it's Governor Tony Evers, it's, oh, that's big spending. It can't be that level at all. Well, somehow along the way, the Republicans controlling the legislature and Governor Evers and local officials, I would argue to a degree as well, have to come up with a figure that they're next going to propose to the Brewers. Because again, there are maintenance issues there already at American Family Field. Of course there are, like any place else. There's, I don't recall the news report that one of the Milwaukee TV stations did, but went behind the scenes and showed, I forget if it was like one of the air conditioning units or chillers at the time, you know, that is, you know, completely broken down, and some of the other things that are starting to, you know, crumble with age, as one would expect over 20 years. That's not unexpected. And yes, the team is responsible for some of that, but it really is a matter of, you know, if the stadium district board has the funds that are necessary to maintain the stadium. And if they don't, if they can't make the repairs and renovations, then why wouldn't the Brewers look and say, well, before this place starts to fall apart, what are our options? And right now, that lease runs out in 2030. And it takes a few years to get something negotiated and prepare for a move. So yes, as early as this fall, when the legislature's back in session, if it appears there's going to be no movement toward a deal, then you wouldn't fault the Brewers for at least saying, well, what are our options? Charlotte would love to have a team. Nashville would love to have a team. I've traveled to both cities fairly recently, and you know, they will be prepared to move heaven and earth in terms of tax incentives to land a Major League Baseball team if they are able to. Now, with the proposal from Governor Tony Evers, what it would have meant, the Brewers would have been willing to go along with extending their lease from 2030 to 2043. And so for a fraction of the state's record budget surplus, the headline could have been Governor Evers saves baseball in Wisconsin for an additional 13 years. Republicans said no, they're not going to go along with that. And but again, to be fair, they're not saying that it's going to be $0, that they're never going to make some kind of a proposal. But this article makes the point that they should start talking this fall. They should see if they can get a deal done this fall and not try to play this, you know, game of brinksmanship or chicken that, you know, so often does not end the way that the parties would like it to. I hope that they take this seriously. There's a lot to talk about in a potential fall legislative session, not just the things we've already hit on about tax cuts and affordable daycare and things like that, but this very real piece of economic impact, not just for the Milwaukee area economy, but for the Wisconsin economy as well. Another story that was in this morning's Journal Sentinel that caught my eye deals with the group Moms for Liberty. And this was actually put up yesterday afternoon by the Journal Sentinel, saying that the group Moms for Liberty, which has been designated by the Southern Poverty Law Center as an extremist anti-government organization, is planning to have a town hall with presidential candidates on the morning of that Republican presidential debate that's going to be held in Milwaukee on August 23rd. Moms for Liberty co-founder Tiffany Justice told the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel that she expected at least four presidential candidates to attend the town hall. She did not share their names or locations about the event. And again, Moms for Liberty, not a grassroots organization. This is your classic AstroTurf organization that is extremely well-funded by right-wing groups. And it is one that has been working hard on behalf of book banning. Banning books from school libraries, very actively opposing efforts to have schools discuss diversity and equity. They have fought ways to engage in social emotional learning. And again, according to the Southern Poverty Law Center, they engage in spreading hateful imagery and rhetoric against the LGBTQ community. In Florida, the group advocated for the law known as Don't Say Gay, successfully pushing to prohibit any classroom instruction on gender identity and sexual orientation through high school in the state. And they've advised on many school referenda across Wisconsin. So this is a group that, again, like the Tea Party years ago, is going to claim to have grassroots support, but it's another way for right-wing big money groups to use their Wisconsin connections to try to spread an agenda that is ranging from extremist to hateful. We'll pause here, looking to talk to Mark Jacob on the backside of the break. Right after this, you're up north. Stuck with Clarence Thomas on the Supreme Court for a while yet, despite all of these new revelations about him accepting luxury vacations and not disclosing them. But before we get to that, we have mentioned today all the different ways to get in touch with the show, and we're happy about every one of them, not just the phone line at 844-967-2789, but plenty of comments on our Facebook and YouTube pages today. And the text line is part of the Civic Media app. You download the app from your favorite app store, wherever you get them from, and not only can you listen to all the different Civic Media radio stations there, you can call into shows from there, you can text directly to the show, and Mark from the SAC is using it to send a text, getting back to our discussion at the top of the hour, Aaron, about toys, the things that are in the Toy Hall of Fame. But then there are things that Mark brings up that should decidedly not be in a Toy Hall of Fame and should not be in a toy box, period.
Yeah, so Mark said, your toy talk this morning brought back some memories. I had loads of fun with my Mattel Vacuform and Thingmaker making creepy crawlers and mini dragons back in the mid to late 60s. And I thought that sounded really interesting, so I looked those up. The Vacuform is a vacuum former, as you might expect from the name. So it takes a sheet of plastic and heats it up with a hot plate, and you melt it onto a mold to make shapes. Like, you can make little toy cars. You can even, if you have another toy that's not going to melt on the hot plate, you can just stick it in there and form the plastic around it and make a duplicate, basically, which is pretty cool. It's just okay. You have an exposed hot plate.
Yes. I mean, who wouldn't give their kid a hot plate to play with, right?
But much more dangerous is the Thingmaker, which is similar, except it just melts liquid plastic into a mold. And that's also pretty cool, except maybe giving kids melted plastic isn't a good idea, especially when it turns out that the Thingmaker has some of the most like toxic melted plastic that you could give to kids. It's listed as one of the most dangerous toys of all time.
You know, people ask all the time, like, what is it with people today, you know, with, you know, you go to, say, Trump rallies and listening to people talk, and not just there. Jay Leno made a whole career out of stopping people on the street and getting their take on things that were just a little bit off. And I'm now starting to realize it was probably a lot of exposure to melted plastic and other things like that that released God knows what chemicals to people. I think we're all a little bit broken from the toys that we had to play with. I had lawn darts as a kid. We didn't impale anybody, but clearly it happened to other people.
Yeah, people died.
So quirky toys that you played with that you kind of look back and can't believe you played with them. What kinds of things were those? 844-967-2789. To me, it was always amazing that the close and play ever worked. It was a record player, and the only way it would work is the needle for the record was on the top of the case, and you would close the case with the record inside, and then the record would play, but invariably, nobody could leave it just sit there. People thought they could like carry it or move around with it. And of course, then the record didn't play at all. But records were the thing back then. There were used to be records on the back of cereal boxes.
Wow.
And you would cut that out and put it on your record player and it would sound terrible. And your mom would yell at you because you're going to ruin the needle on the record. But that was among the more interesting toys that we had that I can't believe. So yeah, the whole thing with melted plastic and some of the other toys they had back then. You mentioned, what did he say? Did he talk about creepy crawlies? I don't think it was creepy crawlies. Oh, it was squirmels. There was something called squirmels. And the one rule was like, it would like crawl down the wall, you know, but you weren't supposed to get it wet, like a gremlin or something. And of course, everybody got their squirmel wet and then that ruined it. And who hasn't destroyed a Slinky accidentally?
Oh, yeah.
You know, you just pick it up the wrong way and it gets a little twist in there. And you think, oh, I'll just twist it right back. No, you won't. No, it's completely useless at that point. But yeah, slinkies were, it was always such a big deal if you could get it to go down the stairs all the way and properly. My God, we were easily entertained back then with a hoop and a stick or climbing trees or whatever. Now compared to all of the video games and everything else that's going there. So we've got a text message coming in from somebody listening out in Waukesha saying, now you got my brain going. Thanks, guys. Used to love and still have the Castmaster. I believe that's what it's called, where you would melt crayons and wax into a mold to make wax matchbox cars.
Hey, a lot safer than melting plastic.
Melting the crayons instead. It's like we're just moving our way up. At what point was there the you know, liquid molten metal?
You know, I'm sure there was.
My kid's first foundry set, you know? Make your own gold medals for the Olympics. I don't know.
But there's one that I didn't own, but I saw commercials for all the time as a kid, and that's Moon Shoes. It's basically little foot-mounted trampolines for jumping around. And any parent who just heard that just started freaking out because that is asking for your kid's ankles to be broken. I didn't get that as a little kid, but I got older and one of my younger sisters, she like sprained her same ankle on a trampoline like four times. We're like, stop going on trampolines.
Oh, yeah. I mean, trampolines are I know we had friends at one point. Their insurance agent just kind of dropped in for a visit. I don't know if they were a friend or an acquaintance or whatever. Came around the corner, saw the trampoline in the backyard, turned right back around and went back to the office and canceled their policy. Because, you know, and we know people who, yeah, they've taken a tumble off and have had to go get a cast on their arm, you know. You had lead painted toys. Ooh. You had something called the Atomic Laboratory Kit. And all it makes me think of is the old Dan Aykroyd Saturday Night Live skit about the bag of glass. And he's like, well, wait, it's a bag of glass. Kids love to play with that. And so Mark responds here from the SAC via text message on the app. It taught you to be careful. And now there are non-toxic options for a plastic goop called Patty Goop. And we never should have had leaded gas, which in addition to poisoning the environment, damaged the engines. And that's just, we didn't really, I hate to say we didn't know. I don't want to take us off the hook. But as we learned more about the dangers of lead, we should have gotten it out of the systems faster. And again, not to take everything back to a political point, but that we still have lead water lines out there and that we still have Wisconsin legislators saying, well, we don't want to pay for that because it just all goes to Milwaukee anyway. For the love of God, people, help the children and get the lead pipes out of there, you know?
Yeah, Mark, I don't care where the lead is. If it's all in one city, I will still pay to get rid of it so you don't have people just dying.
Yeah, exactly. Mark noting as well that he learned how to cast aluminum in junior high. And I remember too, that as well. Yes, we had industrial arts in junior high school, now called middle school in most places. My mother-in-law became a teacher later in life. She was a farm mom, and once her kids were grown and gone, went to school, got her degree, and started teaching. And one of her first things as a substitute teacher was in the industrial arts workshop, in the metal shop or woodworking, I forget what it was. And she had the good sense to make an announcement at the very beginning. I do not know how to turn off any of these machines. If you get stuck, you're on your own. I don't think those kids were ever more careful than they were, thanks to Betty making that announcement that I don't know how to turn these things off. So, kids, you better figure it out.
Hey, that'll keep them cautious at least.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, if you've got a quirky toy, you can either text us or you can give us a call at 844-967-2789. And so coming back to the topic I began things with on Justice Clarence Thomas and what is it that we've learned? It's ProPublica again, investigative journalists who, by the way, before I even get into what they found on Clarence Thomas, I'm gonna hedge off at the pass here. For those of you who are going to say, oh, why are they always investigating the conservative justices? And I'm going to say again, until everybody understands, if Hunter Biden or Sonia Sotomayor or Chuck Schumer or somebody breaks the law, they should be prosecuted, not protected. If if Sonia Sotomayor were the one in this article getting all of these luxury trips and Republicans controlled the Senate and made moves to somehow discipline or even impeach her, I wouldn't be shocked and I wouldn't be immediately going, oh, no, why would you be doing that? No, if you're doing a bad thing, it should be called out. I mean, well, let's get back to Justice Clarence Thomas, who ProPublica is reporting now, upon further examination, has taken at least 38 vacations, 26 private jet flights, 8 flights by helicopter, a dozen VIP passes to sporting events, and stays at luxury resorts at Florida and Jamaica. And that Thomas appears to have broken the law by failing to disclose the flights, the cruises, and the sports tickets. And it continues to put a bright light on ethics rules and, you know, whether justices of the U.S. Supreme Court are supposed to follow them and whether there are consequences for not following them. Now, ProPublica also reported in June that Justice Samuel Alito went on a fishing trip in 2008 with a hedge fund billionaire who has had cases before the Supreme Court. Alito traveled on a private jet along with Leonard Leo, a longtime leader of the Conservative Federalist Society, who helped organize the trip. There was a salmon fishing lodge that they all stayed at, owned by another big Republican donor, and Alito subsequently did not recuse himself from a case involving the man's legal interests before the court. And again, it's not to say that you can debate whether they should or shouldn't be accepted, but if they are accepted, they should at least be disclosed. And then, you know, a justice should feel pressure to recuse themselves in instances where there might be a financial interest at play, either in terms of a gift or a campaign donation. It's what made the comments by conservative Wisconsin Supreme Court justices recently even more disingenuous, that when the new progressive majority justices decided that they were going to take another look at recusal rules and other efforts to increase transparency and accountability at the court, the conservative justices, Rebecca Bradley and Annette Ziegler, cried foul and shouted to high heaven that this was some kind of a radical departure, when in fact it was the conservative majority 15 years ago that tried to make things less transparent on the court. And we should not have any kind of a partisan disagreement that state and U.S. Supreme Court justices are not above the law and they are not above ethics rules. Mark has gotten tired of texting us and has decided to call in and weigh in on today's topic. Mark, hey, how are you doing?
Doing great. And just a brief addendum to the leaded gasoline. There's actually that show on the American Experience called The Poisoner's Handbook, and they actually talked about tetraethyl lead, the additive being created, and the guys that were working with it as an additive to add it to the gasoline were getting lead poisoning. So they gave those guys, safety equipment back in the day, like face masks or something like that, but they just kept putting it into the gasoline. So they actually knew back in the day when they created it that it was bad, and they just went ahead with it anyway.
That's unbelievable.
It was a fascinating program because there's all sorts of other stuff on that American Experiencing, the Poisoner's Handbook. So I highly recommend people check that thing out.
Good.
But it just is. The lead actually, now that it's come out, the lead in the gas thing where they actually told us, and you probably remember when people were complaining about taking the lead out of the gas.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, it's going to damage the engines, they're doing that. But the lead actually caused the obsolescence in those engines that... and they actually damaged the engines. Yeah. Made them last less long.
Oh, it was anything to honor, the automobile, and all hail the car, whatever has got to be done to, help facilitate its expansion, and what a price we ended up paying for that. Mark, appreciate it so much. Have a great start to the weekend there.
You too, brother.
All right. When we come back, we're going to talk to Dan Schumacher up there in Ashland and find out what he's doing to grow the sports program there. But more importantly, we're going to get a feel for just how insufferable he's become now that the Cubs are starting to get good again. I'm thinking that maybe that Bruce Springsteen concert that was at Wrigley Field night before last, maybe that brought some, you know, New Jersey magic in such a way that, you know, whatever good the Cubs were getting is somehow going to be jinxed now. You know, it used to be a goat. Now I'm hoping it's the other goat, Bruce Springsteen, who does something to keep the Cubs from surging here in the National League Central Division. Anyway, that and much more still ahead as we wrap up a week here from Lake Wissota. So good to be home again on Up North News Radio. Back after this. Okay, we have been spending the day with our bumper music saluting American Graffiti that came out this day 50 years ago, but we'll make an exception for Dan Schumacher here. What do we have playing this morning?
It's Box of Rain.
Box of Rain?
That's the name of it, yep.
Perfect, because you're up in the Ashland area that is still, you're closer to the center of this storm system, so you're going to have rain for a little while longer yet. By and large, there's this long trail of showers and thunder showers that's stretching right down 51 and 39, just, you know, eventually going to work its way past Madison and Waushaw and work its way toward Green Bay, Milwaukee. But I'll tell you what, up here in Chippewa Falls, it's looking really nice on the backside of it. Might get some more precipitation later tonight, but Saturday's looking really good. And I'll bet once that clears through, it's going to be awfully pretty up there on Lake Superior as well.
I'm sure it's going to be. Everything is green up here. I mean, mm-hmm. They have been getting rain, where down in Chippewa, we have not.
So Dan had a belated birthday bash in his backyard last weekend, just up the river from me here, closer to Jim Falls. Nice little band that, as I learned after the fact, these four, I think it was four guys, they were playing some of those Grateful Dead songs for like the first time, they said. You know, they hadn't rehearsed them very much. For that effort, they should really be saluted. They did it was a very relaxing day, just getting to chat with some of your Chicago buddies and sit out on the lawn and listen to some good live music.
It was. And the other piece is that they're old colleagues of mine. Three of them are professors from UW-Eau Claire. And one is the dean of the Liberal Arts College, which oversees the music department. He's a musician himself. And he's actually from San Francisco. And then Jim Phillips, the lead singer who really directs the band, he has a little bit more acumen to the music. And, you know, we talked last year about playing, and he put the group together. And it was a beautiful day, beautiful weather. It was a good crowd. It was the right people at the party. It was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun.
The thing I really liked about it, not everybody gets to do this, but you have a vacant lot across from you, and a couple of your friends came by way of RV. Which I think would be really cool. I'd love to have a couple of friends, you know, just park their RV here and stay for a couple of days, and you got to experience that.
Yeah, we ran 200 feet of extension cord from the house across the street into the empty lot across the street to keep those RVs all air conditioned up, so they could put the air conditioning on in these big huge beasts that they drove up. But there was about five or six RVs. Some tents, and that's the way my guys roll. Of course, most of them are deadheads, and we're used to living out of their car.
I was going to say,
they're used to living out of their car back in the day.
Yes. I really was expecting somebody to sell bologna sandwiches out of the trunk just for old time's sake here. So then back to the day job up at Northland College here, where you're busy putting together, you know, fall sports, and then the sports of the future for a college up there. What's kept you busy there?
Right now, I'm interviewing for our new wrestling program, both men's and women's wrestling. We have announced and doing some interviews on that. Also doing interviews for some other positions that are being developed. And we're going to do exploratory on college football here soon. So, you know, it's really the higher education itself is struggling right now with overall enrollment. And it's at every school. I just came from conference meetings where you have Martin Luther King. You've got Northwestern University out of St. Paul. You've got St. Scholastica. You name it. The schools that are small liberal arts schools are struggling to keep their enrollment. And the options are getting smaller. There's schools that have been closing. I think we've talked about that before. I mean,
yep.
Cardinal Stritch closed down the most recent one. It's a tough, it's a dog-eat-dog world right now in higher ed.
Well, and a lot of the big ones get bigger as witnessed by, and I think we got into this last week as well, but, you know, what was once the Pac-8, the Pac-10, the Pac-12, is it now the Pac-4, I think, is all that's left because of this insane realignment of the really big college leagues. And, I mean, maybe in those schools that revenue, you know, works its way into academics as well. But, you know, for smaller schools that don't have a big old TV contract and declining enrollment, I mean, you're right. It really is like two different worlds out there.
You know, I'll give you a quick story, Pat. In 2012, I was athletic director at Division I Chicago State University. And they flew we had an AD meeting, private meeting, out in Santa Monica, California, at the Piedmont Hotel. Every Division I athletic director flew in. We had private meetings, and about 5 or 6 of the top ADs in the country that are still in the business basically told the entire room that what is happening, what you're seeing right now has been planned since 2012. And it all involves the fact is they want to break away and build this super conferences for football. Mm-hmm. Eventually they will probably win the TV contract because most all Division II and Division III are funded by the television contract for the NCAA tournament. And so the only thing the NCAA actually owns is the basketball tournament. They don't have any control over the playoffs for football or anything like that. So none of that revenue comes in to the NCAA from those football bowl games. It gets distributed back to those Power Five conferences. Hmm. So this plan, what's going on, conference realignment, their fingers were wagging at people like me that are at small Division I schools that we better get aligned with a bigger conference or else you're going to be left behind.
Something that will continue. I'm sure this is a trend that will just go on for, you know, for good and for bad in those two very different ways. So, all right, let's get to the National League Central Division here where the Brewers are in Chicago to play the White Sox. But the Cubs have caught up to the Cincinnati Reds. And so it really is a three-team fight now for the Central Division. The Cubs are putting up an average of 5 runs per game, which ranks them 5th in Major League Baseball. Is this, from what you see, is this a short-term surge? Are they exceeding expectations, or is this something we're going to watch all three teams go down to the wire?
I think it's going to go down to the wire. Mm-hmm. I really do. I was so surprised to see the Cubs make some moves a couple of weeks ago and acquired some players. They must have known something was on the rise. Jed Hoyer, the president of the Cubs, he must have knew something was coming on, or the young guys were really coming on, and was willing to roll those dice and acquire a couple of key players to help him with this last minute, this last run to October. So, I do believe that the Brewers are playing well. Everybody's those three teams are going to battle it out for the next 4 weeks.
All right, and let's see, the Milwaukee Bucks. Reports say we'll play on Christmas Day for the 6th straight season, which again is it just tells you how well the team has surged with Giannis and is getting some national TV love. And then finally, NFL preseason is underway. I saw some games on TV at our local watering hole yesterday, so it won't be that much longer till I start making jokes about Jordan Love better not like break his leg in week 1.
It's going to be a fun season to watch. I don't know if I'm more intrigued by my Chicago Bears or to see how the Packers are going to do without Aaron Rodgers.
Well, both. And I'll just close by saying I'm already sick of Aaron Rodgers commercials about the Jets on TV. Thank you, Dan. Have a great weekend.
See you soon, Pat.
All right. One last tune to play us out from the American Graffiti soundtrack. Again, you can follow us at upnorthnewswi.com. Have a wonderful weekend. We'll see you Monday. Good night.
All right. Adios. Talk to you later.
See you later. Yep. Bye.